This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm glad you've decided to spend the next hour with me. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your health and your life. We've got another great show for you today, so grab a pen and paper, your favorite beverage, and let's get started. My guest on today's show is Mary Costa. As a certified diabetes educator, Mary has more than 25 years of experience educating and counseling thousands of diabetes patients with one of the country's largest HMOs, an HMO that has won national awards for its innovative diabetes programs. Mary is also a registered nurse, and she has experienced the advantages of using holistic and integrative therapies that treat the entire person, body, mind, spirit, and emotions. Because mainstream Western medicine doesn't always address the entire person, Mary created Transform Your Diabetes Health, a company where sound medical strategies intersect with healthy, holistic practices. She's passionate about helping her patients live the healthiest and highest quality life possible. On today's show, Mary's going to talk with us about the relationship between diet and diabetes and give us some steps that you can take if you or someone you know has been diagnosed with diabetes. Welcome, Mary. I'm thrilled to have you today.
Oh, Janelle, thanks. I'm thrilled to be with you.
We've got a lot of things to talk about today. So I'd like to start our conversation together by asking you to tell our listeners a little bit more about your background and what it means to be a registered nurse specializing in the treatment of diabetes.
Well, Janelle, I was a nurse for several years working in a variety of different areas and happened to fall into working with people with diabetes. And in the programs that I've worked in, I see patients one-on-one, people with diabetes, mainly adults with type 2 diabetes. However, I also work with adults with type 1 diabetes. And they come into my office or we have them in different group settings whereby we're working on those things that help to improve their diabetes health, helps to improve their blood pressure, their blood sugar, their cholesterol, and creating those healthy lifestyle changes again so that they can see much better health.
Do you work also with people who are what would be called like pre-diabetic or people that display some potential symptoms that might be be closer on the border of turning into type 2?
I tend to work with people who already have diabetes. Diabetes is so prevalent that I'm always getting people outside of where I work that have pre-diabetes, just giving information, and I do different classes outside of my what would be considered my day job about pre-diabetes because we know the progression from pre-diabetes to outright diabetes.
Can you just briefly explain the difference between type 1 and type 2? Because I'm not even sure a lot of people understand that difference.
It's very confusing because people think that because they inject insulin, that's type 1 diabetes. But type 1 diabetes is a very different phenomenon. What it is there's this autoimmune process that takes place. When you're a fetus, your body takes account of what your cells look like so that if a virus comes into your body, it says, that's not my body, let's fight it off. Well, somehow in an autoimmune process, it no longer recognizes your own cells as being part of your body. And that happens for a person with type 1 diabetes. It begins to attack those islet cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. So the person with type 1 diabetes, what's happened is they no longer have the ability to create insulin, which helps move the sugar that's in the bloodstream into the cell, because sugar is what is the powerhouse of our body. You need to have sugar in your body and into those cells. So that's type 1. Type 2 is a different, completely different disease, and oftentimes it's a result of perhaps overeating, being underactive, maybe making the wrong food choices. It can be from overeating from a certain category of food, like carbohydrates. It's a variety of different things, but the bottom line is, believe it or not, in type 2 diabetes, your body makes tons of insulin, but your cells get a little bit stubborn, and they say, I don't feel like responding to insulin, because insulin's what opens up that cell wall to get that extra sugar that doesn't need to be in your bloodstream into the cell. And then if you don't need that sugar right away, sometimes it gets stored on the hips, the legs, as fat, unfortunately. So type 2 diabetes, you can be making lots of insulin, but your body's not responding to it. Therefore, your blood sugar goes up. When that happens, that's when the complications of diabetes occurs. Does that make sense?
That does. And I think everyone should really listen to this, because you did a great job of explaining the difference between the two. I've heard that type 2 diabetes, if you've got it, you can shift and make it go away. Is that true?
Well, you know, we say that you either have diabetes that's in good control or it's in poor control. So at this point in time, there's a lot of controversy out there, a lot of people claiming to cure diabetes. And so far, the only area that I've seen where they could probably make that statement may, in fact, be with people that have had the gastric bypass, because there's a lot of physiology changes that occurs with that. But what you can do is you can have diabetes in good control. And that's where diet and exercise, sometimes medicines, different therapies can bring your diabetes in good control, so that you don't have some of those symptoms, or you don't have those bad effects happening in your body that having high blood sugar can create.
So you're saying once you've had it, it doesn't really go away per se, but it would be in good control, so you wouldn't be having the symptoms with it.
Exactly, but not only that too, it could look like on your lab, like, oh, gee, it looks like I don't have diabetes. But if there's a major change, what we've seen is people, for instance, I used to have a professional tennis player that he injured his leg, didn't know that all along he had diabetes, but when he injured his leg and was unable to play, bam, his blood sugar went up. And as soon as he was able to recover, recoup, get back to playing tennis, all of his labs looked like he didn't have diabetes. But what it really was his diabetes was in good control. That's the bottom line. That's what you really want, whether you want to call it a cure, which you can't really. The bottom line is you want it in good control, so it's not showing up in your labs, not affecting the cells of your body to create damage.
So it sounds like if you've been diagnosed with it, then what happens is when it's in good control, it's not impacting you. But once you've had it, you've got that predisposition to have it start acting up again if you're not doing the right things. Is that correct?
You are correct. Yes, exactly.
Very interesting. Now, what about type 1 diabetes? If you've got that, does that ever shift, or do you always need to have insulin then?
It depends. One of the ways that you can change that is through a pancreas kidneys transplant, where you get a healthy set of kidneys, healthy set of pancreas that no longer have been attacked and they're still able to secrete insulin. Then it would appear as if type 1 diabetes is gone and they can live a normal life. In some instances, that process, that autoimmune process may still be there, and I've seen different patients that have had the kidneys pancreas transplant where it failed and that type 1 diabetes comes right back. But if you want to say, can you cure it with diet and exercise? No, this is a completely different disease. Now, it is possible, and this adds another layer of complexity, it is possible to have type 1 diabetes and to have parents who had type 2 diabetes, and so you can have that combination. That's another animal and probably a different interview altogether, but for the most part, type 1 diabetes, right now there's no cure other than the transplant that I was talking about.
And that helps kind of tell the difference. Now, if someone would be considered pre-diabetic, are they the same as being in good control or out of control, or are they not yet to that stage? Or they just have to watch what they're doing?
They really need to watch what they're doing. You have about a 10-year window, which oftentimes most people don't know they're in that 10-year window of when it all starts off with insulin levels go up, and a lot of times people will have these symptoms of low blood sugar. They're like, wait a minute, you know, I'm having these low blood sugars. I can't be diabetic, or that's what they were having. That's the first step of where the body kind of goes astray with things. And so if they happen to pick up that they've got some blood sugar abnormalities, there is so much that can happen in that first 10-year window. Changing diet, adding exercise, you know, reducing stress, that type of thing, that can prolong that pre-diabetic stage, and maybe they never develop diabetes.
That's interesting. So I hadn't heard that before, that you're saying low blood sugar, because I always thought it was high blood sugar that was pre-diabetic, but you're saying low blood sugar is something that's also a signal that something's going on in your body that could turn into potentially type 2 diabetes.
Correct, because what happens, the physiology changes and insulin resistance begins. And what happens is the normal amount of insulin that was able to open up that cell wall to get that sugar, that extra sugar that needs to get out of your bloodstream, it takes more and more insulin to get the same result. Well, during that process, you may experience that as a low blood sugar. And so it gets so confusing. Because actually once you've developed diabetes, you don't have those types of symptoms. Now you've got the other symptoms of high blood sugar.
I hadn't heard that before. So that's an interesting information. So you talked about a couple of the things that affect your health, but are there any others, that any other symptoms of diabetes or any other things that people should watch for that might signal that they're you know, kind of getting in that pre-diabetic stage or getting close to type 2 diabetes?
Sure, there is. I mean, you know, one of the things that you want to take a look at, first of all, you know, and this is backing up a little bit, is do you have a family history of type 2 diabetes? Do you have parents, grandparents? First of all, if you have that, then you're really going to want to pay attention to your health. And there's different health measures to take a look at, because it's a syndrome of events that are occurring. And it typically is your blood pressure, your blood sugar, and your cholesterol panel. Those three things, and then being overweight and underactive, those are all different clues that the potential that diabetes can begin can start. So for somebody, there's a lot of diabetes in my family, so I'm always watching my blood pressure, always looking at my blood sugar levels and my cholesterol levels and keeping them in good control. So, you know, those are the types of things, you may not feel it, but those or maybe those lab values can indicate to you, I better start paying more attention and putting into place those lifestyle strategies to help improve your health.
Very interesting. Well, we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about eating a healthy diet and what role that plays in diabetes or in pre-diabetes. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Most people know UPS, but did you know we offer expert advice and time-saving tools for startups?
I have a big idea, and now I have big decisions to make.
We can help you get there.
Startups need all the help we can get.
Talk with our experts and find technology that can help you automate tasks so you can do more, faster.
To grow, I need help saving time and money.
Have a one-on-one consultation with a specialist at no cost, and our shipping and tracking tools are free as well.
I want to be more efficient and streamline operations.
You can even sign up for UPS Smart Pickup, which will automatically notify a driver whenever you create a shipment online.
Wow, so I can spend more time focusing on the big picture?
You focus on your business, while we take care of the logistics.
Putting more energy toward my dreams, that would be huge.
Get expert advice for your growing business. See how at UPS.com/startups.
I love logistics.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today I'm talking with Mary Costa, and we're talking about diabetes and being pre-diabetic and some of the things you can do and how it impacts your health. Before we get back in and talk about healthy eating and a healthy diet, I always like to ask my guests what motivate them. So Mary, can you tell us what your big why is? What is your motivation for staying healthy, getting healthy, and living a healthier life?
Well, Janelle, thanks for asking that question. Part of it is that my family has diabetes. But I think the thing that just stays in my mind constantly was an event that occurred very early on when I started working with people with diabetes. And you know, when you're new to an area, I mean, I did all the research about what it takes to be healthy with diabetes, and I came up with a plan that was very aggressive for my patients. And early on, they didn't follow that because it was my choice of what they should be doing as opposed to their choice of what they should be doing. And I had finally gotten to a place with one of my patients where things weren't progressing, and it was clear I'm not helping him, and I wanted to be able to help him improve his health, and I thought, well, maybe it's time to refer him to someone else. And at that appointment, he didn't show up. And I thought, well, maybe he came to the same conclusion. He needs to go see someone else because I'm not able to get him to exercise or to change his diet or check his blood sugar. And, well, about a month later, I answered the phone, and I could not understand the person on the other line at all. And I kept asking, who is this? And the voice sounded familiar, but it was garbled to me. Finally, all of a sudden, a woman picked up the phone and said, hi, this is so-and-so's wife. My husband had a stroke, and he would like to come in and see you. And, I mean, my heart, you know, I just sank. And when I saw this gentleman in my office, this was a man who was vibrant, enjoying his life. And all I saw was the frustration of him trying to express what he wanted to say to me. And all I really could get out of the conversation is, I wish I would have listened. And, you know, that has impacted me so greatly that I think about that. And I don't want anybody to have to suffer that. And so even myself, I don't want to be in that position because there have been family members of mine that have had a stroke as a result of having had diabetes. So for me, I love life. I enjoy life. I want my patients to enjoy life. I want people with diabetes to enjoy life, to get that joy that just puts a sparkle in their eye. And there's a way that you can do that with diabetes. And so that's my motivation.
That's a powerful story that gives me, as you're talking about it, that gives me chills and makes me think about really taking care of yourself. And you made a really interesting statement when you were talking about this and said that in the beginning you were trying to get people to change, but it was really you wanted them to do it, but you realized that they have to want to do it. Did you do something differently, or how did you approach it to get them to understand that it's their choice and get them to see that what the role that they play in this?
Well, first of all, I had to pretend I was diabetic, and I had to do everything, the laundry list of things I gave them, I had to live it. And, you know, it was a tall laundry list, and I realized that, you cannot, I mean, there are some people that, bless them, they are able to, you give them something to do, they can check everything off the list and say, what's next? Most of us aren't that way. I couldn't do that either. And so what I realize is that behavior change, it takes steps, and it takes a mindset change. And so after I tried and failed myself, then I really had to start asking questions of the patients that I worked with. And I asked them what's most important in their life. And what I would hear things like is, I just want to see my daughter graduate from high school. Or the men would say, I want to walk my child down the aisle. And so in knowing what it was that they were passionate about, that they wanted to do in their life, it was much easier to be able to say, so how can we make these changes to get you to that place? Because I think we all need some type of a goal in life. And it was constantly redirecting towards, here's the goal, here's some of the steps, what is it that you can and choose to do? And so it became their agenda, not my agenda that I was pushing. It's like, what do you, knowing the most about yourself, about your habits, how you can change, what you've been successful in the past doing, what is it that you can begin doing? And then it was a matter of strategizing step by step how they can do that. Because and some people, they're great about picking up and making that change. And others, it's like, okay, so we try. Didn't work so well. Let's figure out what went wrong, make that change, and implement it all over, you know, again, knowing what you know. Because in my eyes, there is no failure. It's always a learning experience. The more you know about yourself, the more you know where your hang-ups or hiccups are, and how to navigate around that, that's kind of really more the focus.
It's interesting. In our Eat Great, Live Well program that we have, one of the first things we start with, and that's why I always love to ask people about their big why, is we ask people in our program to identify what their big why is so they understand exactly what you're talking about. Why is it important to make this change? What's driving their desire to make that shift? Because I think if they understand that, it puts it all in perspective. And I love what you said, where it becomes their agenda, not your agenda, because yeah. We can tell someone that they need to do it, and you know from your practice and what you've done over the years how important the shift is and what a difference it'll make. But until someone internalizes that and believes it, they're just not going to make that shift. And they're going to do a few things, but they're not going to do what they really need to do. So I love that you've really built that into what you're doing.
Yeah, I call it finding the carrot to dangle in front of them. You know, it's like, this is your carrot. This is where you want to go. You know, let's get there.
That's great. I like that phrase. So let's take and shift just a little bit. A lot of people struggle with creating a healthy diet, and I want to talk a little bit about what, you know, some specific things they can do. But I first want to start from your perspective. What does a healthy diet look like? And, you know, what do you find some of the biggest challenges people have in getting started?
Great question. I get that a lot. You know, a healthy diet, I mean, I think we all kind of know intuitively what a healthy diet is. For people with diabetes, it needs to be altered. It needs to be altered in a couple of different areas that kind of goes against what we're generally told we should be doing. Until you begin to reduce what I had referred to earlier as insulin resistance. So while fruits are very healthy and fruits in season are very healthy, for the person with diabetes, that's not the first thing that they should be focusing on. But certainly looking at things of, you know, lower fat, fresh vegetables, those types of things. I usually tell people what's honestly most important very early on is the quantity of food that they eat. So you tell people to go out and buy a much smaller plate, and they get one plate, and that's about it. And then in general, this is just to get people started, I'll usually tell them, divide your plate in half. Half of it should be vegetables. Ideally, vegetables in season or fresh frozen are fine, but half of them vegetables. And then the other half of that plate should be maybe some type of healthy protein. And some people are vegetarian, and there's plenty of vegetarian options for protein, or they can have, meat options if that's what they prefer. And then that second half, part of that half is divided into the protein, and then they're now calling it grains, which I would say some people are becoming more and more intolerant to gluten. So maybe grains may not be the best thing, but I call it those things we used to refer to as starches, like it could be rice, it could be potatoes, those types of things in that last quarter of their plate. So if you want to just get something globally to look at, to think at, you know, it's, again, half the plate being vegetables, the other half a combination of the meat or protein, and then that starch. That's the thing to start off with. Fruits, you know, two a day, and we're talking about what can fit in your cupped hand. And your cupped hand is a great measuring tool for that's about the amount of rice or potato that you can have, or the starchy vegetables like corn and peas, which unfortunately tend to be most people's favorite, but that's considered a starchy vegetable and actually goes on the other side of the plate from vegetables. But your cupped hand is a great tool. So starting off with, we know what's healthy, you know, the healthy oils, and I think that we've discovered that no fat has made us fatter. So I'm not against fat at all. It just needs to be a healthy oil. Things like olive oil, nuts have a great oil in them, that type of thing. And
I find that people are challenged with understanding what an actual serving size is. So I love that visual, and I'm a visual person, of your cupped hand. I mean, I'm looking at my hand now, so that gives me a good visual of what a serving size is. But I find people struggle with how to figure out how much they should be eating, and they eat a lot more than they should.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I tell them, get a 9-inch plate, and it's not piled high. You know, it's like maybe a quarter inch high, half inch high, and that's about it, and then divide it up, or using the cupped hand. And men love that, because if their wife's in the room, they cup their hand and go, ha ha, I get more than you, you know, type of thing.
We're always looking at ways that we can have just a little bit more, aren't we?
A little bit more. And, you know, Janelle, honestly, that is really the question that really comes to me, you know, because when I delve down into what's the real question tends to be, what can I eat in large volume? And it's kind of like nothing. Water, but anything in large volume is not good. You know, like men will want something to snack on at night. And it's like, you know, vegetables. Mm-hmm. You know, vegetables are great to snack on, as long as you be careful with what you're dipping them in or putting on top of them. So oftentimes what we really want to know is, what can I have in large quantity? And the answer is nothing really, other than vegetables.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but in our supersized world, I think that's what people are looking for. Well, we need to take another short break. And when we come back, I want to continue the conversation about diet and what people can eat, and then look at some steps that they can take. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. Our annual International Conference and Business Expo is on August 7th through the 10th, and we not only have a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders, but this year you will be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only, conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, interacting, and sharing with other conference members. This will be an educational, inspirational, motivational, and transformational experience. Oh yeah, and we have the best party in town on Saturday night, dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas, Walton Stout. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details on how you can be part of this life-changing experience.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking to Mary Costa, and we're talking about diabetes, pre-diabetes, and just before the break, we were talking about your diet and what it should look like, and I want to continue that conversation. One of the questions I'd like to ask you, Mary, is, are there any foods that people really should avoid in their diet?
Well, Janelle, to be honest with you, again, it kind of goes back to that quantity. If you eat it in a small enough quantity, you can pretty much eat anything that you want. It really goes into what do you like to eat in large volume. And one of the things that comes to mind to me that if there's one thing that I could hopefully change maybe with your listeners, if they're doing this, if they have prediabetes or diabetes, this would make a big difference in their blood sugars, is the standard American breakfast tends to be cereal, drowning in milk. And it's not just a small amount of cereal. It's a large amount of cereal with a large amount of milk. And then, of course, what goes along with that is usually a banana and oftentimes a slice of toast. And so one of the things for people with diabetes that you need to really watch out for is the doubling, tripling, quadrupling of the carbohydrates they're eating at one time, because that is what raises blood sugar, are those carbohydrates. And so I call it doing damage control. So if you have to have cereal, milk, breakfast, get rid of the banana, cut the cereal down, cut the milk down, and add some nuts or some protein. Because then what happens is your blood sugar does not spike from the potential of going from 100 up to 400 by adding on all those carbohydrates. And then when you have like a healthy oil present, what it does is it blunts the effect. It doesn't allow that carbohydrate to race into your bloodstream and make it go quite so high. So cereal breakfasts are one of those ones that I usually kind of say, can you replace it with a toast and peanut butter, or a toast and an egg, or, you know, something other than cereal? And, of course, everybody assumes the healthiest cereal is something like, oh, I'm not going to give a brand, but it's a highly processed wheat product. And everybody thinks it's really healthy, and it's the one that I've seen that just radically raises blood sugars, as well as milk. Sipping milk all day long will keep your blood sugar high all day long. So those, that particular meal, and then it's the quantity that gets you in trouble. Like, you can usually have one slice of pizza. You get two slices or more, especially if it's a large piece of pizza, radically raises blood sugars. But a slice of pizza, big salad, great. You know, or healthy vegetables, great. And it, again, it kind of comes back to the quantity. And then how what you're doing is you need to represent all those food groups. There's a reason why we have all those different food groups. And as much as you can have the fiber, the healthy oils, the protein, carbohydrates are still good, you know, the better off you're going to be.
So what about starting your day? I presume it would probably be fairly similar, but maybe not, about if you're starting your day with, say, yogurt and cereal or yogurt and granola, that would still be high in sugar, then so probably something to avoid, or is that good to eat?
The best way, there's a very simple way of knowing that, and if you happen to have a meter, a blood sugar meter, it's very easy to check before you eat it 2 to 3 hours later to see, does it radically raise your blood sugar or doesn't it? So when people choose to have like yogurt and granola, that tends to be pretty high in carbohydrates. And so I usually call damage control is, how can you introduce a protein or a healthy oil to do that damage control. And so sometimes what I'll recommend people that love yogurt, add some cottage cheese to it. Skip the granola so that they're introducing some protein into that. And then, again, blood sugar can't spike as high. And that's the thing with prediabetes. You don't want those spikes because they can still spike. With a person with prediabetes, what's really happening is their fasting blood sugar is fine. But you start checking their blood sugar after a meal, that's where the beginning of diabetes starts, is those after-meal blood sugars. And so people with prediabetes really need to watch how they're combining their foods.
Very interesting. Now, what about people who've already been diagnosed with diabetes? Can their diet make a difference in shifting what they're eating, make a difference in how it progresses, or is it once they've got it? I know we talked about good control and out of control, but is that where it comes into play? What you choose to eat will either help keep it in control or make it out of control?
Absolutely. You know, you can almost always make a difference by choosing healthier choices and the way that you combine food. So somebody who's had diabetes for years, changing their diet makes a big difference. I've had patients that have come into my office that were supposed to start on insulin. And I mean, I literally had a gentleman who was buying, like, you know, 2 gallons of milk, you know, a week and drinking that, and just cutting the milk out and just reducing the carbohydrates. He didn't have to go on insulin. As a matter of fact, we could reduce some of his other medicines, which, you know, the idea, everybody wants to get out of this world with the least number of pills, which I get. I'm kind of the same way. But the more that you can make changes in diet, and if you can possibly just in exercise, the more you're able to return to health and then hopefully be able to minimize the medicines you may need to take.
When I hear people talking about, and there seems to be more talk about it from time to time, about food combining. So it sounds like there are some different combinations that people really should look at if they are diabetic or pre-diabetic, to really make sure that they're getting all the things that really balance out their blood sugar and keep it from spiking.
Absolutely. Yeah, because again, it's those carbohydrates are that's what you need insulin to move that sugar from the bloodstream into the cell. If you just ate a steak, you need no insulin to process that. It gets broken down, and nobody would do this. Well, hopefully nobody would, but if you just drank olive oil, it doesn't raise your blood sugar at all. But the value of either the meat or the plant protein is that because it doesn't use insulin and it takes longer to break it down, is that it has that buffering effect on that carbohydrate. So combining that. And you know, I also have to say, Janelle, is that everybody is very individualized. And sometimes this process doesn't work so well for some people. There is a way of knowing exactly what works and what doesn't. But in general, what I'm saying usually fits for most people with diabetes.
Yeah, we've seen a huge rise in diabetes in recent years. One study funded by the American Diabetes Association predicted that a total of 29 million people will be diagnosed with diabetes by 2050. That's an increase of 165% over the number diagnosed in 2000. What do you think is causing that huge increase?
Well, you know, I just want to tell you that, believe it or not, right now the statistics are that 26 million presently have diabetes right now. And not all of them know that they have it, but this is a scarier statistic. There are 76 million people in our country with prediabetes. So my opinion as to why this is happening has to do with making food much easier to consume quickly by fast food. And I'm not saying that all fast food is bad. It's just that the quicker, the more processed food is, the quicker it gets into your bloodstream, it tends to be unhealthier. Even things like sometimes a salad that you can get from a fast food restaurant, there's so many preservatives on it that then you really wonder how healthy is it. But I think what's spiking that is the way that we eat now, the choices that we make, because food is so handy. I mean, you can go to a place like Costco and get a ready-made dinner, and all you have to do is pop it in the oven. I'm not saying that that's bad for a diabetic, but food is just so easy to get to, and it's so easy to make unhealthy choices because there's such variety out there. So that, as well as being underactive. I mean, I remember, okay, so I'm dating myself. I had to take PE. I had to be active for, I don't know, I think it was an hour a day. I don't think that happens much anymore. And so I think that combination of being inactive, of having such unhealthy foods available to us that we can consume quickly, I think that's what has fueled the epidemic that we're seeing. However, we also have better ways of detecting diabetes. And when we change the ways, the diagnosis, when I first started in with diabetes, normal blood sugar went up to 140. When they changed that normal blood sugar should go to 125, they added on about 10 million people.
But the lower the blood sugar number is, the better. I mean, you do want that lower number, so it's probably a good thing they changed it, isn't it?
Absolutely, and the reason they did is because leaving it at 140, people were coming in being diagnosed because they already had a complication of diabetes. So we know 140 and above starts those complications. So, yeah, I mean, they're even wanting lower blood sugars than 125, but there's some controversy surrounding that. But still, yes, you are correct. The lower, the better within the normal range.
So I usually hear that you want the number to be under 100. So, and some doctors even say, you know, under 80. What? So, where should someone focus on being?
For somebody who has diabetes and who injects insulin, I usually give them a little bit more of a push on their blood sugars. But in general, if you have pre-diabetes, you want your blood sugars to be somewhere between 80 and 100, ideally, that would be the range that you would want. Normal is, and I'm going to tell you that different groups and associations have different blood sugar ranges, but In general, what the general standard is 70 to 100 on a fasting basis is where you want to be. 100 to 125 is prediabetes. That's the range for prediabetes. So that's generally, 70 to 125 is considered, quote, normal. It could be, especially after a meal, that your blood sugar is going to go up. Although I have to say that somebody, when I eat spaghetti and I eat a whole plate load of spaghetti, that's a huge carbohydrate intake, my blood sugar doesn't change but maybe 2 or 4 points. Somebody with diabetes who does that, their blood sugar is going to jump anywhere from 40 to 200 points after a meal.
Good heavens, that's a big shift.
Yeah, and that jumping high because of the food combining is what contributes to heart disease.
Well, we need to take another short break, and when we come back, I want to just ask a couple final questions and really talk about what people ask you the most and learn a little bit more about how people can connect with you. So this is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, CEO and founder of eWomen Network. Do you have a message you're dying to tell the world? Have you always wanted to host your own radio show? join our EWN Radio Network team, just like Janelle McCauley, and give your message the voice it deserves. For details, visit EWNRadioNetwork.com/host.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're having a great conversation with Mary Costa about diabetes, prediabetes, foods to eat, and really things to look for to take control of your health. And I want to continue the conversation, and I want to ask you, Mary, what would you say is the first step in managing diabetes and really creating a healthy future?
Janelle, I think the real first step is about changing your mindset, and it's about making yourself a priority. One of the things that I've seen over and over with my patients is they're usually last on that to-do list, and so they're not the priority, and oftentimes, in addition to that, we get these mixed messages from the past about food and what we think food represents in our life. And food is really about nutrition, and it's about fueling your body. And so just really putting a light on the truth of what food really is, it's that mindset of switching it over from being a place of comfort, a place to go to when you're feeling sad, et cetera, is changing that mindset that the food can fuel your body to feel healthy, be healthy, and you deserve to be healthy. So mindset to me is really that first step of making that decision of putting yourself first and making that decision that you deserve to be healthy.
I like the way you put that you deserve to be healthy. And if people don't have their health, it impacts so many things that they can do. We kind of go back to what is your big why? And most people, I know for me, I want to be able to be here to, you know, my children are grown, but now I've got grandchildren, and I want to be an active part of their life, and I want to be here to enjoy things with my children and grandchildren. And if I don't take care of myself and stay healthy, I'm not going to be able to do that. And that, to me, breaks my heart. That's why I take care of myself.
You know, one of the things that brought tears to my eyes once was when I had talked to one of my patients, and I asked her, you know, when we were kind of coming to the end of our journey of working together, and I said, you know, what have you gotten the most out of all of this? And she had lost weight, and she said, you know what the most important thing to me is now? She goes, I can get on the floor and play with my grandkids. And she said, that is wonderful, but you know what's even better? I don't need anybody to help me stand back up from being on the floor. You know, and it's just, yes, those are the free things in life that bring us joy. That's what I want people to enjoy.
And there's a lot of simple things in life when you really take a step back, and having just the independence and being able to do those can make such a difference in what you want to do. I mean, you talk about mindset, but when you're so dependent on someone else to help you do those little things, it's discouraging. It really makes it tough to want to get up and, you know, make the most out of every day.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you and I've had some conversations, and I'd love to have you talk a little bit more, because you've said that diabetes is not a sprint, but a marathon.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. One of the reasons for me even, and that term is used a lot in different other industries as well, but for me, you know, it would appear that selling to people with diabetes these days is the best thing to do if you want to make a lot of money. And so there's all these programs that are out there that you can cure diabetes in 2 weeks and you can get off all of your medicines, and they're talking about a sprint. They're talking about something that you can implement for a short period of time, but diabetes is something that you invest for a lifetime. And, you know, and as an example of this, you know, years ago, I used to go whitewater rafting, and I loved it. But before I ever got on that river, I invested in a company that could teach me how to wear the life vest properly, how to paddle. Believe it or not, when you've got 6 other people in the raft, you need to know how to paddle properly, who's paddling forward, who's paddling backward. You need to know how to set that raft up so that you go through that rapids correctly. It's the same thing with diabetes. there's an investment in learning about your body, about reconnecting with the signals that your body gives you. And so it's not a simple process, and it's not a quick fix. It's not just about diet. It's about a variety of different things, and it's about investing your time, your energy into learning what it is that you need to know, practicing it, working out the bugs in it, and not when you fall down, staying down. It's about getting right back up and continuing on that marathon so that you get to that goal, which I call that carrot. What is it that fuels you? And like you in your programs, what is your big why? What is that? That's what the marathon is about, is about getting to that. Not the first 2 weeks, not just getting to some quick goal. That's not what it's about. So for me, it's learning the strategies that you can make it a lifelong habit with joy and ease. And, yeah, it's an investment. And like any investment, it takes time and energy. But the payoff is definitely worth it.
Well, and it's really changing and creating that healthy lifestyle. I mean, we hear from people when we talk to them, you know, just give me the quick answer. Give me, I just want a pill, or I just want to know how to take the weight off, like in the next week. And it takes a while to get to the point where you've got a problem and all of a sudden they want to fix it. It didn't come on overnight. It didn't change overnight, but they want to fix it overnight. And it just, you might have, like you say, short-term fixes, but they're not going to be there for the long term. They're not, you know, it really is a lifestyle. So I like the way you do that. Can you tell us just a little bit more about your company, Transform Your Diabetes Health?
Yes, I'd love to. You know, I work in the arena of traditional Western medicine, but as a nurse, we have always looked at body, mind, spirit, emotions. We look at the whole health of a person. And oftentimes, traditional Western medicine doesn't always look at all those areas. And there's wonderful integrative strategies, therapies, holistic measures that have been shown to be very healthy and helpful in managing chronic diseases, pain, and a variety of different scenarios. And what I see is I see two camps out there. I see the camp of traditional Western medicine, and then I see the camp of shooting doctors, fire your doctor, don't listen to a word that they say, try this. And I don't think either camp has all the answers. And so what I want to do is first, I created this organization when I found out that by 2050, this is what's staggering, we could be spending $8 trillion a year on the complications of diabetes. And even in the global economy, they're saying that economies could collapse under the weight of the complications of diabetes. So for me, education is always very important. You need to know what you need to know. So I developed Transform Your Diabetes Health as a place where you learn about the five crucial areas. It doesn't make a difference whether you're the traditional Western medicine versus integrative therapies and health practices. There's a certain baseline of information that you need to know and practice and do and get support in. And so I developed that so that we teach different modules, we practice it. There's a community of support there because people, we all need support. We're here. We need each other. We need to help each other. And I can tell you that no matter how much I can tell somebody, it would be great if you test your blood sugar. If somebody else who has diabetes tells that person, what do you mean you're not testing your blood sugar? That has a lot more weight than me telling someone. So I want to create that community, that forum, that place where people can ask their questions and get educated answers, and from some place that's not trying to sell them a product.
It sounds like something that a lot of people can definitely use. How can our listeners get more information about your company and about diabetes in general?
Well, there's a variety of different places, but first of all, just for my company, our company is called Transform Your Diabetes Health, which is a lot of letters to put into a website. So our website is www.tyd.org. And if you go there, we offer a diabetes health and wellness assessment. And what it is it's an assessment. It's kind of like a questionnaire that you answer. You rate yourself on how well you're able to do different things regarding taking care of your diabetes. That's an assessment that we offer for free. That patients or that people that come to our website, they can take that. They can find out the areas that they're weak in and then get some ideas on how they can improve that. We have, and we're building also a resource page for just different things, the different strategies and tools that people need. They can go there, get the resources, recipes. I love the American Diabetes Association website. There's, you know, that does represent traditional Western medicine, but they usually have sound practices, sound strategies. I can't say they always have the right answers, but I tend to like them as a place, too, where you can go and look. Bottom line, we're all individuals. We all have different beliefs and ideas, and I want to serve those who I'm able to represent that it fits their belief pattern. If what I offer doesn't fit, then you can Google diabetes and come up with a wealth of different places. I would just, you know, caution people to avoid specific just nutrition sites that are selling you different products. Not to say they don't provide good information, but maybe their reason for writing the article isn't always pure.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and that's a good reminder. Our listeners can also go to Eat Great, Live Well, radio.com, and we'll have a link to your page where they can get more information. As we wrap up our time together, I would just like to ask you if you can give our listeners just one quick action item that they can implement in the next week to start creating a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love. What would you tell them to do?
Well, the first thing is to put yourself first on the to-do list. And then begin moving more, and, you know, as long as you've been okayed by your physician. So that means maybe walking more, maybe going out for a bike ride. But this is what's important, is that you take your family with you, because not only do we want to help the person with diabetes, we want to prevent it in the generations to follow. So move more, take your family with you, make it a family type of thing, or with your friends.
I want to thank you, Mary, for spending the last hour with me and really starting this great conversation on diabetes.
Oh, Janelle, thank you so much for allowing me to share the information. That's my goal.
So until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourselves and your family. Be sure to join me each week so that we can build a healthier relationship with food together. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week, and remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.